Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of A Day in the Life of Ankura's podcast series, where we showcase some of our incredible expertise. And today I'm joined by Danny Howard, a director in our cybersecurity practice, who's going to talk to us about a day in the life of a threat actor negotiator. Now, this is an episode that I'm particularly looking forward to, as I know Danny has some incredible stories, not least ones that are very relevant in the current geopolitical climate. So, Danny, I guess before we kick off, can you give me a quick intro before we dive into the good stuff?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Lewis. It's good to speak to you today. So I've been with Ankura for about 3 years, currently working as part of the incident response team, leading investigations to support clients who are suffering from a variety of cybersecurity incidents. So that might include ransomware attacks, business email compromise incidents, or more general network and web-based attacks. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I worked in law enforcement. So I worked within a cybercrime investigation team, supporting investigations through analysis of digital media, investigating criminal offences primarily under the Computer Misuse Act 1990. Throughout their life cycle, so from inception to trial at criminal court.
That's great, Danny. Thanks for that intro. Brilliant. I can't wait to hear a little bit more about it. But first, I wonder whether you can sort of tell me what a threat actor negotiator is, and then maybe, you know, talk us through some sort of recent examples or recent jobs you've been working on.
So as a threat actor negotiator, my primary role is to engage with sort of threat actors where instructed. So often that's following the theft or encryption of data from a company's network. To maintain anonymity, certainly on the part of the threat actor, it's almost exclusively on chat platforms on the dark web. So in terms of recent incidents, we recently engaged to support a client whose data was being made available for sale on a popular hacking forum. So for that, we initiated contact with the seller that was using Telegram, successfully negotiated terms. So that included the removal of the data from the site, the fact that we were the sole purchaser, so it wasn't available for others. And really, we removed all trace of it quite quickly. So that came in, I think, on a Friday evening. By the Monday morning,
as they all do,
they always come in on a Friday evening. By Monday morning, 9 a.m. Monday morning, we'd successfully acquired the data, we'd reviewed it, and we were able to report back to the client with a detailed summary of what that data set contained and where we suspect it originated from. So that helped them to understand how it got out into the public domain.
And sort of typically, what sort of, you know, techniques do you use to negotiate? Are these sort of like, you know, typical things that you would know that we would all do sort of in our, you know, our day-to-day lives, or because you are, you know, negotiating with, you know, effectively sort of, you know, criminals, does that take a sort of different slant to it?
I think for the most part, negotiation is just reaching a compromise which is agreeable to all parties. So, you know, for a successful outcome, you have to understand the objective of the other party. I mean, in terms of how you do that, it's adaptable, and it's, you know, it's the same in, you know, and whether you're dealing with a threat actor or not. And, you know, first and foremost, keep calm. You know, you can't effectively negotiate just based on emotion. And take time in advance to consider all the possible outcomes and whether or not that meets your objectives. Most of the negotiations that we sort of take place with threat actors will take place on a chat platform. So that gives you some breathing space. It gives you the time to come up with a measured, appropriate response. As with any form of communication, you adapt your language and your style to suit your audience. Quite often when we're taking place in these negotiations, English is not the native language of those that we're communicating with. Be mindful of that. And also, you know, what do they have as their bargaining chip? You know, ultimately threat actors will want to get paid, normally via cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And you know, what do they have to hand that's going to help them achieve their outcome? And normally that's the encryption of data in the case of ransomware incidents. But also we see data exfiltration as a secondary means of extortion. Mm-hmm. And quite often now, unfortunately, that's something that's also targeted by threat actors and something that they'll look to publish on their websites. And, you know, we're mindful of that as well. We're mindful of what that data might be. We know that threat actors will target specific documentation. That might include company accounts, or it might include a company's cyber insurance policy. And we see that quite a lot in negotiations where, you know, we may come up with a figure and actually they've got documentation to hand that gives indemnity levels or...
So they will know.
You know, I think, you know, in both cases, they're, for the most part, threat actors going in, you know, fairly well armed into these negotiations these days. So I think it's, you know, having a plan, but you know, being flexible and, you know, hopefully getting to an agreement between all the parties.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess, you know, it's probably quite obviously the primary motivation is financial, but has there ever been any other sort of asks from threat actors that is sort of non-financial?
I think for the most part, it is, you know, almost exclusively financial. I mean, we work on all types of incidents, and, you know, negotiation doesn't always come into it. We quite often work on network intrusion cases where, yeah, actually there's no data encryption or there's no request for payment. So I think it's trying to understand the motive of the threat to that. You know, on those occasions, it's perhaps a little bit more difficult. We've worked investigations where we've seen threat actors within a company's network for 6 months, wow. And, you know, quite persistent access after they've, you know, been removed from there. So yeah, it's understanding, you know, what is the motive in those circumstances. Is it, you know, what does the company do? Is it, you know, sensitive data? Would it be of interest to other organizations or nation states? So for the negotiation part, it's almost always about money.
I guess that absolutely makes sense now that it's become a quite a lucrative business, hasn't it? Especially to attack, you know, attack Western companies. But I wondered, you know, throughout your, you know, many years of this type of work, would you say there are sort of, you know, key traits or skills of a good negotiator, both from, you know, your perspective and working on this side, but also, you know, from a threat act perspective, are there particular types of people that are, you're sort of famously difficult to work with?
Yeah, I mean, I think we, you know, we work, I say work, we have to engage with sort of various threat groups, and there are some that are more prevalent, and, you know, lots of these groups will get taken down. I think law enforcement do an excellent job of taking down these groups from time to time, but a lot of them will rebrand because it's very different. You might be able to identify a server or some individuals, but the way that a lot of these groups are set up now is they're affiliate services. So actually they've got individuals, you know, working around the globe. So that brings its own challenges. If you know a specific group, then you can understand their methodologies, their tactics, their, you know, how they get into a network. But where you've got affiliates, they might work differently. So, you know, they might get into a network differently and then have a, you know, a playbook of what to do when they're in there. I mean, that creates its own challenges, certainly on the investigation side. I mean, in terms of, you know, the skills of a negotiator, I think, you know, I think I've touched on it before. It's keeping calm. It's very different if I look back to my law enforcement days, where, you know, I'm dealing face to face with people in an interview, or I'm being cross examined at court. That's much more fast paced. You have to think on your feet. You have to consider, you know, very quickly the words, the phrasing that you're using, because it's something that will likely be involved in a sort of criminal outcome for somebody. But yeah, I mean, with threat actors, you know, we're always trying to achieve the best outcome for the client. You know, we want to help them get back online as, you know, as quickly as and efficiently as they can.
And that's where your skills obviously come in. But I was wondering, you know, if we have some of our clients that are potentially listening into this and, you know, may have been involved in one of these in the past or are thinking about, you know, their exposure to these types of things. You know, what do you think is, you know, maybe the one thing that you see our clients consistently seem to get wrong in these situations? And I guess, you know, what would we recommend to help them better prepare?
So I think, the importance of backups can't be understated. We know that every day organizations, big and small, are being targeted. And that, unfortunately, a lot of those, actors will get into the network. Going back to ransomware cases, we know that backups are a high value target, because if they can encrypt your data and they can encrypt your backups, then you have unavailability of data. And that makes you more likely and more compelled to initiate a conversation with them that's ultimately going to meet their outcome of getting a payment. Backups are hugely important. Having those available, having some data to roll back to, and that that can greatly reduce the recovery time for an organization after a cybersecurity incident. I think having a robust cybersecurity plan and being able to test it regularly is hugely important. And having a copy offline. We've worked on a number of cases before where we've spoken to companies. They've said, right, we've got this really good disaster recovery plan or business continuity plan. We've tested it. We know it works. And then it's only sat on a server that's encrypted, and no one's got an offline an offline copy of it. I think thinking about, the availability, if all systems were unavailable, do you have offline copies of this documentation? Do you have contact numbers of people, email addresses? Is there an alternative means of communication if you've suddenly got no email? I think there's lots for companies to think about, and actually lots that companies are doing right already. Although we see this occasionally, actually, for the most part, a lot of this is already in place, and I think there's a lot of investment that's been made to increase the cybersecurity awareness of individuals and organizations.
Yeah, and as we always sort of tell our clients, it's not a matter of sort of if we were experience one of these incidents, it's more a matter of when. These types of things are becoming more and more common, and we bring in that human element. These things are effectively inevitable. So as you say, having that plan in place, and having also consultants like ourselves just to sort of fall back on if needed at any point, allows them to sort of quickly recover. So I think that's sort of hugely important for any of our clients that are listening. And as we sort of start to wrap up, Danny, I always like to ask this question. I think this one will be particularly interesting with yourself in sort of the role that you play. But I wanted to ask, if I had your mum or dad or sort of a member of your family here and asked them what you did for a living, what would they say that you get up to on a day-to-day basis?
I actually asked my children, so I've got two young children. I asked them this question before I left to get on the train this morning. The sort of general reply was, if someone gets hacked, you sort out their computer. And I think at the
that's
heart,
a very good response.
I think at the heart, that's right. My role and Ankura's role is to provide assistance to clients, following a cybersecurity incident. And quite often at that initial point, people are in a high state of anxiety or distress. So I think, it's working with them to devise, a containment and investigation recovery strategy to get businesses back online, as efficiently and as quickly as possible, back to business as usual. So if someone gets hacked, we sort out their computer.
I like how succinct that is in the sort of description. I really like that. My daughter just says that I sit in meetings all day, which again, she's not far off.
One as well. So
yeah, I think that just gives a bit of an insight into what our children think that we do for a living. But I think that's pretty accurate as well. No, that's been brilliant, Danny, and I really appreciate you spending time with us today. There's some really interesting stories. I'm sure you could sort of regale us for hours with all the various negotiations you've been involved in the past. But yeah, thank you for your time, and I think that's it for this episode of Ankura is a Day in the Life Of. So again, thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next month with another incredible leader from our practice. But as always, if there's any questions, feedback, or anything else you'd like to hear on the podcast, then please do drop us a line or any of our guests a line on LinkedIn, and we'd love to hear from you. So thank you.
Thanks, everyone.